Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to talk about children with autism and their families. They face a number of challenges, like dealing with difficult social and behavioral situations. And we're going to take a look at ways you can help with our guest today. Dr. Kristen Wegner is a clinical psychologist with the Altoona Autism and Behavior Center. She's also the author of the children's book series about Brody the Lion. We'll talk with her about both and answer your questions as well as we move along today. So what would you like to know about helping children with autism cope with unexpected events, for example? Have you been able to help your child through perhaps some meltdowns? I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Dr. Kristen Wegner, welcome to the show. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Larry. So appreciated.
Well, tell us about the work you do at the Altoona Autism and Behavior Center.
Absolutely. So we are a very small clinic, and the current pandemic has made us even smaller, unfortunately. But we serve very young children. So we serve children starting with at the age of one, about 12 months, and we do what's called early intensive behavioral intervention. And so our goal is diagnosing children with autism or other behavior disorders at a very young age while the brain is still developing, such a critical, important step if we can diagnose early and then do intervention. And our focus is on addressing the difficulties that children have, like you mentioned, with social or behavioral challenges. And we work directly with the children, but we have a huge emphasis on parent training. So we keep the parents engaged and involved and participating in our sessions and following through at home so that our kids that we're working with can hopefully really start off on a positive and success.
Yeah, I got to imagine that with the pandemic, it's had an effect on the kind of work that you do or how you're able to conduct your work.
It did. We, like many people, shut down in March for a while, partly because it was just so difficult to get PPE. So once we got enough masks and hand sanitizer and hydrogen peroxide and bleach and all the things that we needed, we then started working with our families on teaching their children how to tolerate wearing a mask, because that is something that is difficult for so many children and adults, but especially children with autism. And so during the time that we were shut down, we did telehealth sessions primarily with the parents, because it's pretty hard for a youngster to try to do a therapy session via a video link. And so we practiced and had the parents practice. And so since May, we have been open with a very reduced schedule and shortened sessions with our kiddos wearing masks and trying to social distance. So our play groups and our social activities are much less. We still do a little bit, but with some social distancing. And then in between each of our two-hour sessions, we disinfect and clean the whole office and then get ready for another couple kids and do that three times a day.
Oh, man.
Well, I'm exhausted at the end of the day.
You got to believe that. Autism, I'm told, affects one in every 54 children. My goodness. What does it do physically?
Yeah, the autism affects how the brain processes information. And so there's areas of the brain that are overactive and then other areas of the brain that are underactive. Autism doesn't affect intelligence. So there are autistic individuals that are brilliant and average intelligence and those that have cognitive impairments. And even though it affects 1 in 54, getting that early diagnosis is sometimes so difficult, especially for those children who have average or above average intelligence. Because if a lot of people, even teachers or pediatricians, think of like a Rain Man, or think of somebody that has autism and a cognitive impairment who might not be communicative, might be nonverbal or flapping or rocking. And that is a tiny, tiny fraction of individuals with autism. Many children with autism and adults are verbal and have eye contact. And so the way the autism affects them is very different. And so it's affecting, like you mentioned, two areas, the social communication, so how someone understands and navigates social interactions, the back and forth social reciprocity, perspective taking, that type of social. And then this other area called restrictive repetitive behaviors. And those are something that could be as simple as compulsively lining up objects or opening and shutting doors, dumping out objects onto the floor, watching things float in the air. And so when you're looking at a toddler and you're talking about repetitive behaviors, well, that's what toddlers do. They push buttons, they open and shut, they dump, you know, they watch things flap. And so how do you discern whether this repetitive behavior is autism? Is really difficult. And so, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the books is because I can barely talk about it without choking up, because you know, it's just my lifelong work. And I have sat across the table giving a diagnosis of autism to older children and have the parents just tear up and say, I knew something and nobody listened to me. And if only I had done something earlier. And of course, it's never too late, but the services and the therapy, there isn't as much once a child gets older. And so it's so important to get the message out about what autism looks like, especially in those children who have average to above average intelligence. And a lot of kiddos with autism have what we call hyperlexic skills, and so they might learn their colors, their shapes, their numbers, even ahead of what would be typically developing. And so when a parent brings up a concern, again, teachers, grandparents, maybe even a pediatrician might say, oh, no, but look it, he knows all his colors, he knows all his shapes, he can't have autism. And so it's, I can go on and on, but I'll.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know, you work with children that are a year old. How do you, as a professional, discern that the child is autistic?
Yeah. I want to say it's not that hard, but it's really understanding child development. And I came about being a clinical psychologist in an odd way. So early on, I started my career off as a chemical engineer and realized I talked way too much and really enjoyed people to be working in a laboratory somewhere. And so my bachelor's degree is in voc rehab, and then I worked with adults and just felt like I wasn't getting enough difference. I wasn't making enough difference. I went back and got my master's degree in education, early childhood special education, and worked as a birth to three teacher and then as an early childhood special educator in the classroom. And then fell in love with autism and just the amazing aspects of ABA. But I really wanted to blend the ABA behavioral therapy with the child development. And so having so many previous occupations, you know, really, I mean, that's it helped because I understand child development. And so when I'm playing with a 12-month-old, I can tell the difference between that typically developing holding on to an object versus the non-functional and what that non-functional play looks like. And the key really is in that social, because even at 9 months of age, there are some amazing experiments that were done in the field of psychology. And if people know Piaget or Vygotsky, there's one called the virtual cliff that there's a plexiglass table, and they put the nine-month-old baby on this table, and of course the baby's very safe, but the baby gets halfway across, and then visually it looks like the table is dropping off, even though their proprioceptive, their hands are telling them that the surface is solid. And that mom standing at the other end, if she smiles, that baby will continue across. If the mom frowns or gives a warning visual, no words, that baby, even at 9 months, will step back. And kids with autism don't do that. They don't recognize facial expressions and gestures and that back and forth.
Wow. Dr. Kristen Wegner, our guest today, and she'll be with us right up until 12:30 today as we talk with her about teaching behavioral regulation to kids with autism. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. You'll have a chance to do that right after this look at the news. Number to call, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Children with autism and their families face a number of challenges dealing with social and behavioral situations among them, and we're taking a look at ways that you can help with our guest, Dr. Kristen Wegner. She's a clinical psychologist with the Altoona Autism and Behavior Center. She's also the author of the children's book series about Brody the Lion. So we'll talk with her about both and answer your questions. What would you like to know about helping children with autism? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Wegner, I'm wondering, when should parents have their children looked or their child looked at? It sounds like it should be earlier than later.
Yeah, most pediatricians do an assessment at 18 months. It is called the CHAT, and that is something that is done as part of that 18-month-old health check. The problem is that very often, as I was talking about, it will catch the children who are struggling with developmental milestones, that language, speaking, they don't have words, maybe they're not walking yet. It's going to catch those kids a little bit easier than it is that child who maybe has eye contact and answers his or her name when the parent calls. And so some of the problems, and it's a great assessment, and it has been wonderful in picking up, but it does miss some of the more nuanced aspects of that social. And so, for example, the pediatrician might ask, does your child request when he wants something or she wants something? And the parent answers yes. But that nuanced piece is the way that the child might request might not be by looking at the parent and pointing or sharing information. It might be taking the parent's hand and pulling them to the object, or taking the parent's hand and putting it on the item that they want, or bringing the item to the parent. And that social interaction, that piece about the facial expressions and the gestures that we were talking about right before the break, is so critical in communication.
We have Gretchen from... We just lost Gretchen from Madison. You can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk about your new book, I Can Do It, Yes I Can. You have pages in the book for parents, which I found really interesting. One of the things you talk about is... person first or disability first? What do you mean by that?
Oh, that's just a wonderful point. Thank you for bringing that up, Larry. And you heard initially when I was talking about autism, sometimes I mentioned the child first or the person first, and I said a person with autism or a child with autism. And sometimes I used the term autistic. And this is something that, depending on the disability, varies on how we should use, whether it's disability first, like saying autistic, or the person first, child with disability. And if you think about the deaf community, we don't say a person with deafness. The deaf community, you know, is a very powerful, wonderful community and embraces their deafness. And so there are many people with autism, many autistics, especially adults that are advocates that want to promote neurodiversity and not be a stigmatized puzzle or a problem, somebody with a problem. And so those individuals want to be called autistic and be viewed as autistic. And then you take a community like Down syndrome, and that community very strongly advocates for being a person with Down syndrome, the child first. And so it really depends on what the disability is and what the community or the person or the parent chooses. And so I think it's always best to ask the individual what their preference is, or the parent if it's a child.
So this is your second book, by the way, in the Brody the Lion series. The first was Sometimes I Roar. Why did you write them?
So the first book I started writing over 30 years ago after I went to a birthday party of a young child with autism who was not diagnosed, but I knew he had autism, and he did a lot of the things that my character Brody does in the story. And he was had a little meltdown when somebody arrived late, and he had another meltdown when people sang happy birthday, and he had another meltdown when he didn't get the present that he was expecting. And it broke my heart, because had this child been diagnosed and had this child been getting therapy, that birthday that should have been a wonderful celebration and a fun time wouldn't have had to have been so distressing for him and his family. And so as I was driving home, I kind of, you know, started writing that. And this is, you know, before computers, before phones. And when I got home, I wrote it on some note cards and put it away. And, you know, as the years have gone on, I don't think I even necessarily thought about it until I mentioned earlier when I was talking with parents, and parents always say, you need to write a book. You need to, you know, get this information out here. More parents need to know about this. And after, you know, getting my PhD and starting my practice, I started writing a technical book and a very informational book. And I realized that's just not the way the message is going to get out. And then that little story kind of popped back into my head, and I said, you know, that's the ticket. That is what we need to do, is to connect with both the kids and provide the hands-on tools, and then also providing information. So each of the books in the series will have those resource pages at the end of the book, talking the first book about some different intervention techniques on how to help a child overcome, or in the second book where we're introducing a variety of new characters with different disabilities, a little information about children with differing abilities.
Well, it's, you know, and the books were are really interesting to me, and they're to be read by the parent with the child. And you even talk about different ways depending on the child. In some cases, you read, you might read the whole sentences. Sometimes you read just a couple of words and look at the pictures with a child.
And that is something that I think so many parents don't understand. when I work with a new family, they'll say, oh, my child isn't interested in reading. He just doesn't sustain. And that's so sad because reading is such a wonderful social interaction, as well as we know a foundational skill for learning and for late language development and for later reading. And I, the best way, you know, as being a non-autistic person, the best way that I can think of what it sounds like for that child with autism or maybe some other developmental disabilities is it must sound like that teacher's voice in Charlie Brown with a wah, 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 wah. When we're reading these wonderful books that have this complex language with rhyme and rhythm, and it just, it doesn't make sense. And so when I'm reading to a child, I understand development so well, I make sure that the words that I'm saying make sense to the child. And I might have to test that out. If it's something that I don't know and it's a new book, before I read it, I might look at some of the pictures with the child and ask, what is this? What is this, you know, character doing? What is happening? And then adapt as I'm reading and not quiz the child and not ask questions. But as I'm reading, I might say, just for example, in that second book, there's one page that has a lot of text where it says, Brody asks questions one after the next. Will I have fun? Will it be best? Will I see monkey? What about bear? And it goes on, and that's a lot of words. And so if I have a child that's not understanding complex language, I might say, you know, Brody asks mama, you know, where we go? And I might bring that language to the same level that the child is using so that the child has that understanding and can connect with the story and make sure that the child is participating because, again, reading is a social activity. And if the child's not engaged and participating as you're reading, then the benefits of reading aren't going to happen.
Oh. Judy in De Pere has a question for you, I believe. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it. I'm just curious as to whether or not there is any research being done in regard to adults with autism, Asperger's, things like that. I feel like folks in our generation, I'm in my early 50s, we would not have been diagnosed, you know, with autism or Asperger's or anything like that. Though I feel that there probably are, you know, plenty of us that have exhibited those behaviors when we were young. But it would have been that we were shy or maybe just introverted or something like that. I'm just curious as to whether or not there's any research being done on adults.
Judy, that is a wonderful question. And I do not know of any. And it's not just adults, it's even the young adults and teenagers where there is such few resources. So even if somebody, you know, I get calls frequently of somebody in their 30s or in their 20s that says, I think I might have autism, even just getting a diagnosis is extremely difficult. Altoona's in Eau Claire County, and in Eau Claire County, there are only two doctors, myself and one other, that even do autism evaluations for children. It is extremely difficult to get a diagnosis. And so what I will do is try to help a person if they think they might have autism. I think the actual getting the diagnosis is not the important part. It is knowing how do I handle the issues that are causing distress in my life, the big crowds or needing sameness or having difficulties maybe doing interactions at work or in social situations. And so directing that person, even if I can't see them myself, trying to spend some time to give them some resources, because there are some wonderful ABA, Applied Behavior Analysis, resources and the ENACT, acceptance commitment therapy that will really help teach some great techniques, some mindfulness and some behavioral techniques to help a person be successful.
And where does a person kind of the average person find that information?
I don't know. That is a really good question. Because, you know, the Google and the internets are so complicated. You know, when you type something in, you're going to get so much information. It's really hard. And often, by the time someone gets to us, they, especially somebody that is older, they have been trying and are getting, you know, sent to one person after another person. And so, you know, having some cohesiveness is certainly something that is needed. But there are very, very good associations all across the country. And the Greater Wisconsin Autism Association is an excellent resource. And so there are good resources and there are good conferences. Not that we're going to conferences right now, but, you know, hopefully in 2022, we'll get back on to doing some of those wonderful resources that parents can attend and learn and gain information.
So there is a state association.
There is, yes. I can send you that information so you can put that up, Larry.
Yeah, send me that information. We'll put it up on our page in the notes comments on our page. Judy, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. In your new book, Brody, and Brody's a lion, by the way, right? And meets many new kids, and they have different abilities. Tell us about these characters.
Yeah, so the first book was a compilation, I think, of all of the children that I had met over in the last 30-some years. And so his first core group in that first book are just animals. There's Brody, who is a lion, and then we have snake, bear, hippo, and monkey. And initially I was just going to write characters that had autism. That's primarily what I do. And as I started promoting the first book, I joined Instagram. I'm a little bit older and had not joined the social media craze prior to trying to promote a book and get a message out there about autism and helping families. And so once I got on Instagram, I found so many amazing groups and individuals that connected with Brody and connected with the story. And I decided that we really needed to expand. And so I invited just a couple of people that I had connected with to ask if they wanted their child to be an inspiration for a character. And that's where the first character that has Down syndrome came from. And the other new character that's in the book is a dedication for a wonderful dear man who unfortunately lost his life in a house fire last November that had been very impactful in my development as a professional. And he had autism and epilepsy. And so that's where those two characters came from. And then I opened it up and I started something called Brody's Buddies and invited anybody that wanted to have their child have a character to join. And now I have way more people than I have characters, but we're working on trying to develop a character for everybody. And they're based on real children with real challenges. And even some of the older children are contributing and developing their own character. And so it's possible that I might do a separate series that uses some of those characters and explores their disabilities a little bit more, because the Brody series, I already have quite a few books written, are really about that behavior and that autism. So I think I'll be busy in my retirement.
Kylie emailed that as someone on the spectrum and someone who works with kids with autism, they're with children with ASD. Sarah Ward and the social thinking, I'm sorry, I got my messages goofed up here, so let me start over again. Kylie emailed that someone on the spectrum and someone who works with kids with autism, there are three main components you should do with all kids, but especially kids with autism. number one, routines, number two, clear expectations and consequences, and three, follow through. You have to follow through with what you say. She also says there's an adult assessment in Madison. She was diagnosed at the age of 38. So what do you think about routines, clear expectations and consequences, and then follow through?
Yeah, I think those are, of course, very excellent techniques. And we definitely want to do those things. I think sometimes we might want to challenge those a bit. And I certainly use routines. I will use picture schedules. I will give warnings, because change in routine is one of those elements that can be very distressing and cause meltdowns. But one of the things that we work on is actually teaching a replacement behavior, because if we get so rigid in following a schedule and a routine, it's only going to reinforce that need for a routine. And so we try to be flexible and use routines when we need it, for sure, but then try to teach unexpected events and being okay when something out of the ordinary or a change in routine happens, because that is part of life.
Yeah.
I think we all experienced that this past year where I think we got a taste of what it feels like to have our routine disrupted and what it must feel like to be somebody with autism, because it was extraordinarily difficult. And those that have better regulation and able to cope with changes probably coped better. And so if we can teach how to, like in that first book, how to do some of that behavioral regulation, how to take some deep breaths. And so we have kind of a two-tiered approach where we're going to use the routines and the schedules as a technique to prevent, but at the same time teach for the long term of how to be accepting of the changing in routines.
In the last 30 seconds or so, how do we get copies of the book?
Oh, excellent. So there are some available right now on Amazon, and I'm not really launching the book until November 7th, but they are for pre-order on Amazon, and then they will be available with a discount on my website, the www.brodythelion.com, and then starting November 7th, they'll be available on Barnes & Noble and Target and all those other places as well.
BrodyTheLion.com for your site. Thank you very much, Kristen, for being with us today. I really appreciate it, and all the work you've done over the years with children with autism. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Larry. I really appreciate it.
Dr. Kristen Wegner, clinical psychologist with the Altoona Autism and Behavior Center. And her books, Brody the Lion series, and Brody is B-R-O-D-Y, Brody the Lion series. Great to be able to talk with her. Tomorrow, entomologist P.J. Leash will be back to talk about Asian lady beetles, among other things. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.